Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guests today are Ed Miller and Matthew Davidow, discussing their new book, The Logic of Sports Betting. Ed, Matt, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Ed Miller, you've been on this show several times. Primarily, you've discussed poker books you've written, and recently you've discussed betting on fantasy sports. Except for a brief mention of marketing budgets, the current book doesn't discuss fantasy sports at all. What's the new book about, and how did you come to write it?
Sure. So the new book is it's called The Logic of Sports Betting. It's by me and Matt. And basically, we've been working, Matt and I have been working together on a sports betting business concept for the last 3 or 4 years. And with the world, with the Supreme Court, rather, when they, you know, obviously overturned it, and then sports betting is starting to spread. I noticed, you know, just from looking on Twitter and just seeing, you know, media coverage of sports betting and stuff, that there's a lot of kind of misconceptions, and there was just a lot of room for, I think, kind of an education for everyone involved, from sports bettors to, you know, honestly, some people who work for operators, the lawmakers, you know, honestly, everyone who's involved, people who work for the leagues in the sports and so forth. I saw some room for kind of like just kind of some basic education about, you know, bam, bam, bam. Here's what you need to know if you want to be involved in sports betting. And that was kind of the book I think we tried to write.
Yeah, I think, but it's more than that. It also kind of establishes a path for someone who wants to bet sports with an edge.
I think the book somewhat transcends sports and is completely applicable to all things gambling. You know, myself and background as a, you know, poker player, and then, you know, with sports, and, you know, somewhat in other markets. I know and I respect a lot of the casino advantage players as well, and I think that the concepts that we explain in the book are, you know, transcend sports into all gambling realms.
Yeah, you left out most of video poker. I didn't feel you were heading into my territory at all.
It was an oversight. I'm sorry.
If you
Bob.
Have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
So, Matt, David, I welcome. Richard and I haven't met you before today. What is your gambling background, and what was your role in this project?
Well, I started off as a poker player years and years ago, and we morphed into some sports betting. Recently, we've been doing, we being me and Ed and our other partner, we've been doing in-running modeling, and we're turning that into a U.S.-facing B2B business concept.
B2B?
Business to business, excuse me. Sorry. We've been talking to so many people lately, and I've spent so much of my life talking to nobody. So,
Well.
Sitting in front of a computer screen. Yes.
That's right.
I've been working on my social skills very hard, and I appreciate everyone's understanding.
Good.
So you guys built a model for in-game betting, and your model, you contend, is better than what the current books are using. And how is that? And you want to sell it to them, because that would be a huge score, right? If you become the in-game guys, how is that going? You mentioned you're talking to lots of people, but has anybody bit yet?
Well, I mean, we have a long-term business approach, and
that sounds like a no.
The good news, especially for listeners of this podcast, is that everything we have is going to be available for free on our website starting in August at Deck Prism Sports.
Yeah. So basically the plan is what you said. So we've been building models for in-play American sports being NFL and college football, NBA and college basketball, and MLB. So those are the kind of the five main American sports we focused on. We have spent several years working on these models. We know how they look compared to the existing betting markets and the current betting feeds that exist. We know they're strong compared to that. And So, yeah, as you said, we're trying to build a business where we're going to sell these feeds. There's various obstacles to selling the feeds. One of them is buy-in, obviously, from operators. But a big one is licensing. Licensing just takes time, as, you know, and so forth. So in the meantime, you know, while we're kind of getting past some of those hurdles, especially the time-consuming ones, we are planning to offer our product. We know it's the proof is in the pudding a little bit in this sort of thing. I mean, we could say on a podcast till we're blue in the face that we've built great models and they're the best. And, you know, that's really not worth anything. What's worth something is if we produce real-time, you know, odds that are good and that beat what's available on the market. And that's, you know, what we've done, but it's not public yet. So we're going to make it public in August. We're going to go ahead and publish our numbers on our website, deckprismsports.com. If you're a bettor, you can go to the website. You can look at our odds as long as they're, you know, available and use that information however you see fit, whether it's to bet it or just to laugh at us. You know, it's really up to you. And, you know, we also think that, you know, operators and hopefully other people in the industry will also see what we're offering and will see that you know, it is really a quality product.
Well, the operators out there currently, many of them just steal Pinnacle's numbers, right? They'll just go look at Pinnacle, and when Pinnacle moves the line, they will take whatever Pinnacle puts up there. If what you have built is a winning, are winning numbers, bettors are going to see it and just start betting your numbers when they do not match what the books are offering, and the books are pretty quickly, I would think, going to learn that they're getting hammered, and then they're just going to steal your numbers. So yeah, how do you get them to...
Can we hire this guy?
Right. Yeah. So I mean, yeah, what you've hit on is definitely a thing. So right now, it's in-game, and again, our focus is in-game. That's the problem that we're trying to solve in particular. The way in-game numbers get made is basically there are third-party vendors that produce a stream of odds for in progress games. That's where the odds come from. So our business is basically we want to be another one. We think we're going to be the best one, but we want to be another one. And yes, you're correct that what happens with sportsbook operators is, let's say they have one of these feeds. So they purchased a feed from a third-party vendor. They put the feed up, you know, available to bet to their customers. Well, their customers can go ahead and look at the market lines, can open up, you know, whatever sports books they have available, can look at lines, and they can try to find arbitrage opportunities. They could try to find scalps. And I think that's where a lot of these operators are getting beaten currently on their in-play lines is, you know, they don't get any action. And then all of a sudden, you know, one time the feed puts up something that's a scalp with things that are other place in the market. Now, all of a sudden, everyone wants to bet the scalp, right? So they get, you know, I mean, obviously they get like a steady stream of, you know, call it square action, recreational, whatever. Call it, you know, people who just want to bet the game because they're betting the game. But then they get disproportionate action every time they put up their feed, gives them a number that's a scalp with, you know, other places in the market. So that's really the problem from the operator's perspective, is that they're getting a lot of bad action from their perspective, you know, and honestly, it makes them defensive. I mean, they say, well, I mean, if I put this product up and, you know, I just, you know, run the feed and let people bet it, I'm going to lose, you know. So they don't do that. They lower the limits. They put delays on. They try to, you know, be careful about restricting, you know, how bad they get beat when they put a scalp up. Well, we think, you know, again, with our, you know, company, that we can kind of solve that problem for them where, you know, they're not getting killed every time they put a scalp up.
Well, if they buy your feed, but how do you stop them from just stealing your feed if you're going to put it up for free?
It's hard to sell something if you give it away for free.
Well, again, so the I mean, obviously we have to produce the numbers, you know, on a going forward basis. So just because someone has, I mean, if someone, I mean, I don't think this is, I don't perceive that this is going to be a business problem for us. Matt looks like he wants to talk.
Yeah, if you're going to be posting the games on the Yankees versus the Red Sox in August 3rd. I don't know, they're playing August 3rd. And it's a commercial break between the second and the third inning. There's going to be lines you put up on the odds of Yankees winning, the odds of Boston winning, the odds of will they score a run in the next, whatever you put up. And those might be good, but that would have little bearing on a game in September. Is that what you're saying? Kind of.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's an ongoing product. I mean, it's a product that, you know, I mean, if the whole world agrees that, you know, we're awesome and we put up great lines, you know, eventually people will pay for that fee is the idea.
Unless you're putting it out there for free.
Well, right, but that's we can put it where we want.
I mean, you mean what you're saying is eventually you will stop.
Right. I mean,
if it's crushing, you will stop giving it away, and then
or maybe we won't. Or maybe we'll just give it away forever. I mean, there's
we'll do whatever makes the most sense. I think is the answer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because currently there's one particular big sports book that I know of, chain, that just has a screen of Pinnacle up, and whenever Pinnacle moves a number, they take Pinnacle's number and they
but
move
theirs.
But
that's not in-game betting. You're not talking about in-game betting. You're talking about...
It's whatever betting.
The Patriots by 3 points and the over and under numbers.
Well, I mean, a lot of our... For what it's worth, a lot of our in-running, you know, lines and product that will be up, I don't think that the Pinnacle deals where we'll be doing a lot of college basketball games, a lot of college football games, things that... We want to bet on things that operators in America are going to deal, and there's going to be some
Pinnacle
nice edges.
Would steal your number. I'm saying the guy who's stealing Pinnacle's number is going to steal yours if it's actually much better than his.
Oh, for sure. That's 100% our intention.
Okay.
Our numbers are free for all.
Once you know they're stealing it, then you can shut it down and say, now if you want it, you have to pay for it.
Or, I mean, there has to be many, many ways to use positive website traffic, and I know I'm talking to a couple website pros right now.
Yeah, I mean, the concept, I mean, again, this is, you're kind of in my head talking about a problem that I feel like is kind of down the line for us. I mean, I feel
admittedly
what we think there's value in the analytics. We think there's value in the real-time analytics, that what's worth something is taking the raw game information, the where's the ball, who has the ball, what's the score, what's happened in the game so far, who's injured, how are the teams playing, all that kind of information, and kind of condensing it in a real-time way into tangible numbers that you could take a bet on. We think that process has value, and, you know, how we monetize that value, it's open. You know, we just want to demonstrate the value over the
sure.
next, you know, year
yeah.
or so.
All right, let's step back a little bit. We've been talking about in-stream betting, which is somewhat down the line in sports betting. So let's start with some of the basics to give our audience a flavor of what's in the book. There's a difference between market-making sportsbook and retail sportsbook. What is the difference, and why does the player need to know this?
So this is So let's talk about pregame for a while. So how does a pregame line get made? Well, first someone, you know, jumps off the cliff and says, okay, here's a game. It's tomorrow. I'm going to put a line up, and they stick their finger in the air, or that, you know, they use some kind of, you know, equation or spreadsheet or something. And they say, okay, I think the line should be about 3.5, you know? So then they put up 3.5, but really that's one guy's opinion or, you know, a small group's opinion. They put the number up, and then they start taking relatively small action on it, $200, $300, $500, you know, on each side. And then what they do is they open it up, and they take bets. And their process is, I'm going to take a bet and move a line. Take a bet and move a line. So if someone wants to bet +3.5, well, they move it to +3, or they move it, you know, they move it to +2.5, or +2, you know.
An example of this is, if you remember the win up until last year, the year before, they would open the college football numbers, I think, first in the world. Like early Saturday, before the offshores came out with numbers, before anyone copied, they put up their own lines. And it was basically one really smart guy doing the best he could to put up a line. And he'd take a bet. He'd take a bet. He'd move the number. That's market making.
Yeah, that's market making. So that's the concept, and in the book we talk about it like it's a dichotomy, like there's a market-making sports book and a retail sports book. But the reality is, and we mentioned this in the book too, but the reality is it's a spectrum. All sports books do some market-making, and all sports books do some retail behavior. So what retail is it's copying the market maker, basically. So it's, or following the market maker. So it says, if the market maker is taking action on a market, moves the line, they say, okay, well, I should move my line too. And the reason someone would do this is, like, especially, I mean, the easiest way to understand this is, in order to make a market, you have to have a market. You have to have enough people who want to bet something that, you know, you can reasonably expect that someone's going to bet your line and, you know,
put it into shape. Well, let's say I'm in Las Vegas and I want to put up markets for Australian rules football, right? I know there's a few tourists who come and are going to want to put bets down, but really there's not a market for Australian rules football here in Nevada. You know, well, I'm going to act as a retailer. What I'm going to do is I'm going to look probably at someone who's based in Australia who gets real market action on Australian football, say, what line do they have? And just kind of copy it. And then if they move their line, I'm going to move my line too, because what do I know, you know? And so that's kind of the difference between market making and retail bookmaking.
There's a great example in the book about buying and selling gold that kind of drives this point home.
Yeah, so we talk a little bit about what is the price of gold, you know? And let's say I asked you, you know, hey, Richard, what's the price of gold? What would you do? You'd probably get on Google and type in price of gold, you know, because what do you know?
right?
Say you've got, you know, a gold coin, you're going to sell it to me, and I say, what's a fair price? We're going to Google it, and then Google's going to give us a number, and we're going to say, let's go with that. Well, that's the retail process, right? Somebody in Chicago or somewhere is buying and selling, you know, hundreds of pounds of gold every single day, you know, and they're finding a price through this price discovery process. Now, here we are in Las Vegas with one gold coin. We don't know what the price is at. We just copy what they're using in Chicago. And that's the reality. That's honestly what makes sense.
Okay. Changing subjects. One of the main points of the games is that you're more likely to find good money-making derivatives than the usual bets of sides and totals. Matt, why is that?
Well, and first explain what a derivative is.
So the derivative is basically is a line or set of odds that can be derived from the main odds. If you think about, if anybody follows financial markets, what is a derivative in a financial market? A derivative is a price that is completely based on a larger price. And do you want to explain this better, Ed?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, like, so the main market-making books, there's let's call it three main markets for a typical game. There's a point spread, a money line, and one total, right? Those are the main markets. Those are the markets with the highest limits. Those are the markets that get the most action. Those are the markets that really get hammered into place with price discovery. And then you've got markets on the game, the same game, that are different, like first half lines. So you got a first half spread, you got a first half money line, you got a first half total. And now, you know, now you want to get fancier than that. So you want to put up a first quarter spread and total. Now you want to put up a second half before the game's even started. You know, you want more and more and more bets. You want more options for your customer. Okay, so now you don't want to offer, let's say the point spread, you know, at the main market making point spread is 2.5. And you want to offer your customers the ability to lay 7.5 points, and then you need to price that bet, right? You say, so, okay, if 2.5 is 50-50, what's 7.5, right? And you need to put a price up, because you want them to be able to bet that. And then you want them to be able to bet 10.5. And then you want them to be able to bet props, like who's going to score first, or who's going to get to 15 points first, or whatever. I mean, really, honestly, whatever you could think of. All those other bets that I listed, the quarters, the props, the second halves, all that stuff is dependent on the original market, right? Because if you have two teams, if you've got Alabama playing, you know, Florida A&M or whatever, you know, in football, Alabama's a massive favorite. They're going to have a different first half line, a different first quarter. All those answers are going to be different for that game than when Alabama's playing Clemson, right? And so you can say, well, I can look at that point spread for the main game, and I can basically map that point spread to prices on all these other markets. And that's the concept behind derivatives.
So for the bettors out there, the guys who are interested in betting sports, you kind of describe this process of how to derive your line as a bettor. And so it seems like to become a professional bettor these days, you need to understand a fair amount of math to do this.
I mean, I think in any gambling form, trying to make money using odds without having a solid statistical and probability base would be very difficult for sure.
Well, not – I mean, certainly you can become a card counter. Certainly you can go out and become a guy who plays advantage slot machines without, you know, really having to know much math.
Yeah, know? I think that's true. I think you do need a little bit stronger math background, you know, for sports for sure.
And do you think that you need some programming skills?
No, definitely not. I'm going to argue even against the math. When you think about what is the most basic way to win betting in sports, let's say you live in Nevada, you live in New Jersey, but especially now with this, many, many operators are opening. They're offering bonuses. They're offering other marketing dollars. At the same time, they're offering tons of product. And I mean, I know the derivative explanation was long, but when you think about how much product is up at all of these operators, how many derivatives, how many in-play lines, and often these lines get left behind. Often there's scalps and arbitrage opportunities between the different sports books. And even when there's not, even when the lines are within a penny or two, and one of the concepts that we talk about in the book is how to win even when you don't have an arbitrage, when you only have, you know, a small minus 102 on one side, minus 102 on the other side. How do you win at that? And something we go into in the book. And I don't think it takes a lot of math to figure out how to bet plus 105 on one side, minus 103 on the other side. I think that's a doable thing right now in sports betting.
Okay. Oh, so you, okay. So yeah, those kind of arbitrage situations you think are still.
Again, it's less in the main markets. It's not like you're going to walk, you know, you're going to wake up and find some NBA side, game side, and just be able to just, you know, arbitrage it to death. But, you know.
Certainly in running.
Yeah, in running, yes. Basically, all of these derived lines, all of these lines that are not really subject to the price discovery that I discussed, all these lines that the sports book is basically doing math to come up with it. They have the pregame line that's subject to price discovery that has been moved, and then they're doing some math to go from that to a line, to a related line. And it's the math part that can lead them astray. It's easy to get the wrong answer or easy to get an inexact answer. And then the next sports book over does slightly different math and gets a different answer or has slightly different customers. And for whatever reason, their line's in a somewhat different place. And so the more kind of in the weeds you get on these bets, you know, and yeah, these have smaller limits, but the more in the weeds you get on the bets, the more you're going to find these arbitrage type opportunities.
But even without the arbitrage, you suggest Alabama football. Let's say they opened up at a 38-point favorite or something over, and they get hammered down to 33 points because there's a lot of money on the other side. How often do the derivatives get moved accordingly? Or once the derivatives are there, are they there? Because that seems to be where the opportunity is.
For sure. For sure. I mean, every operator, every sports book is going to have a different way of moving those lines and a different, you know, speed and accuracy. And certainly one of the games of being a sports bettor is finding the sports books that
are slow. Them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, I mean, or bad at math.
I mean, there's something like on the order of 12 operators here in Nevada. There's like 15 or 16 in New Jersey. I mean, there's more every day in New Jersey. I mean, and these are independent operators. They all do business slightly differently. They all have their own teams, their own trading teams. They all have their own ways of solving this problem. And yeah, they're going to solve it differently. They're not just copying each other, especially not on these derivatives or on the in-game stuff.
All right. We were talking to Ed Miller and Matt Davidow about their new book called The Logic of Sports Betting. Right now, we have to do a few commercials, and then we'll be back to Ed and Matt. South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In June, there's a half-price gas and goods promotion. Throughout calendar June, for every $8,334 you earn, you play through, instead of getting $25 in cash or free play, you're entitled to a $50 gift card for Chevron or Walmart. There's a limit of 10 cards per person for the month. Assuming you value these cards at face value, this means the slot club returns 0.6 for the entire month for your first $83,000 of coin in. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Super Draw 6 Card Poker. This is a 10 coins per line game where you're dealt 5 cards, and in addition to drawing cards to fill in the cards you discard, you get one extra card per line. There are extra categories like a 6-card royal, meaning ace to 9 suited, six card straight flush, four of a kind with a pair, three pair, two three of a kinds, six card flushes, six card straights. You have to develop your own software to analyze this game because commercially available products don't have all these pay schedule categories filled in. Okay, we're back to talking with Ed Miller and Matt David now about their book, Logic of Sports Betting. Let's talk about betting bonuses. With all these new sports books coming online in all kinds of states, they're all making promotions. It seems like this is a really good time to be a sports bettor. Is that right?
Certainly.
Yeah.
How do you take advantage of this?
But I think what you see in a lot of operators, a lot of sports books, you see the deposit bonus. Like you can't watch a, you know, watch a commercial or go to a website without seeing the different deposit bonus. One thing to keep in mind is oftentimes I've seen the operators give out different bonuses with different marketing. You're only going to get to sign up once with each operator. So it's probably worth a little bit of time to do a little bit of research to try to figure out what is the best initial offer upon sign up. Probably underrated. We don't talk about that in the book, but I think that's when, every time I see a commercial for FanDuel and it says receive a $10 bonus, and I know that there's $500 to $1,000 bonuses out there for FanDuel. I'm like, I wonder how many people are signing up with that $10 bonus they see and missing out on the bigger one.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is if you have experience going back to the online casino and online poker days, a lot of this is going to be familiar to you. A lot of it's very similar concepts. Deposit bonus, you know, these come up with a rollover requirement. And one of the things we do talk about in the book is how to kind of maximize a bonus like that. Let's say, I mean, it's one thing, okay, if you can bet, you know, sports plus EV, you know, then go do that. But let's say you're not plus EV. Let's say you don't want to spend the time, but you want to take advantage of a bonus. Well, you know, the way to do that is very similar to the way you do it in online casino, which is basically you try to go bust, right? So you bet a high variance strategy, and the goal is to try to bust your entire, you know, deposit plus the bonus, you know, before you have to play the whole, you know, money through.
Now, with the online casinos, they sort of figured that out and they started restricting you as to how much you were allowed to bet on any one bet. Have the sports books figured that out as well or no?
I would imagine that some have and some haven't. And because there are so many different ways to bet, you know, at many operators, parlays, if bets, so many different odds, you know, from favorites to dogs, that even when they take those precautions, there's still probably a way to round it. I mean, one thing to remember, with any of these perks, whether it's a bonus with a rollover or free play, the sports book and the player are never really aligned at the same time. They kind of take turns having an advantage. It's a little bit like a poker staking op, or, you know, poker stake or any kind of free roll situation where nobody's really even at the same time. You're trading an advantage on one time for an advantage on another time. I know a lot of your listeners are well aware of how this works, and rollovers and bonuses are similar.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought that you did mention in the book, which I thought was clever, maybe if I was a sports bettor, I would just know this out of hand, but the idea of, because you want such high variance, so you would want to bet a parlay, but rather than betting it as a parlay, you get so much more action by physically parlaying it yourself rather than betting it as a parlay to start with.
Yeah, this is all goes down to whatever their rules are for the bonus. You know, I mean, if you know, a parlay is basically an increase. Let's say you're going to bet a two game parlay and you're going to bet $100. And so what a parlay is it's you're betting $100 on the first game. And then if that wins, you're betting all the proceeds, including the original $100, on the second game. So you can either do that in one ticket and then, you know, close your eyes and then get paid at the end if both bets win, or you can manually do it. You can bet once and then go bet the second game, you know, with that amount. And the difference can be, you know,
the amount of your total action.
Well, the difference between making, let's say, a two-team parlay that pays $260 and a money line dog that pays $260, let's talk American odds now, plus $260, is when you bet one game, you're only playing into, there's only one hole, there's only one vigorous, there's only, you're
one
only
event.
And the other time you're betting the two events, because it's two events, it's basically two holds for your same 100.
Right. And
you
know, if they had any sense, they would count a parlay as more than $100 in action. Right.
I mean, it's so complicated. It also has to do with the way they're regulated. I mean, yeah. It goes down to their taxation might change. That's a rabbit hole right there. But
right.
But from the bettors don't have to worry about that. But you just need to understand how the bets are counted.
But actually, let's say you had a parlay where the first bet is going to pay 3-1. So you bet $100 and now they pay you $400.
Right.
And now you bet $400 as a parlay. They're going to hate that if they think about it, compared to the guy who just bets $100 on a two-team parlay, because they are going to pay tax on the $500 rather than the $100. So
yep.
We do have a whole chapter in the book that very interestingly, I think, explains the parlay math.
Yeah.
Okay, let's look a little bit on parlay. I have looked at parlay cards and figured the holes were too high, other than... if you can find correlations, which sports books used to have allow a lot more correlations than they do today. How do you make money with parlay cards?
So the main kind of angle on parlay cards is that they put the parlay cards out. Let's say it's football, right? They put the parlay cards out, say it's college football.
Okay.
And they're going to put a parlay card, they're going to print it on a Tuesday, let's say, and put it out.
For Saturday games.
Yeah, exactly. And basically the offer is you can come bet that card at any point during the week with the printed lines. So what happens is you're basically taking advantage of the line movement. You're taking advantage of the information that comes out between Tuesday and Saturday.
Anymore, though, they take those games off the cards. And I'm not a parlay card. There are some very good people that they're experts at this in Las Vegas. I'm not one of them. I think that kind of thing is basically used up.
Yeah. Okay.
I had a friend who said he used to want to wear a hockey mask in to bet the parlay cards because usually they would just throw them back in his face.
Now, what we've seen that's super interesting, and Ed is a master at these, he's seen prop parlay cards for, like, say, the main, like a Monday night football game will have these prop parlay cards, and there are obvious correlations within here, and clearly the operator understands there's correlations and thinks that they priced it in such a way that even if you play all the correlations, you still don't have an edge. Ed has found that there is definitely opportunity within these cards to play the correlations at the what are poor odds without the correlations and come
out ahead. It's not every game, but you know, some of the games the lines are set in such a way and the certain things you're looking for, and then you can play them and they're correlated. And you can,
I'm not sure how easy this would be to do for, like, Ed has the advantage of using our model.
I have a model where I could basically just, you know, yeah.
And part of, I can read the listener's mind as going, I wish Ed would be more specific and say, well, you look at the first quarter total and you look at the da 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 da, and these are correlated. And the reason you can't give that kind of information is?
Well, it's first of all, what he's referring to, the correlations are actually complicated. Like, I didn't figure out how to beat this card just by looking at it and saying, well, that's dumb. You know, it wasn't dumb. I mean, whoever, you know, is making these cards, as Matt said, like, understands this is a problem, you know, and basically I took it as a little bit of a challenge and said, I bet I could figure it out, you know. And so I kind of used our model and spent a day, you know, trying to figure out. The other thing is, as I said, it really depends on what lines they put on the card. It has to do with, like, let's say it's football. It has to do with, there's a lot of quarter total lines, right? So, you know, it has to do with what did they put 9.5 on the card for the first quarter or 10.5? Did they put 15.5 or 13.5, you know.
Well, the question seems to be, how do I, like, win with parlay cards? Can you teach me to win with parlay cards? And the easy answer is, even if I could tell you everything I know very specifically, no, I cannot. I don't think I can win on parlay cards. I mean, maybe with the model, with time, but where the book is great is we really focus on spots where you can win. How do you win in sports betting? Open up accounts, collect the bonuses, look for particularly in-play odds right now. You're going to find arbitrage opportunities, scalps. You're going to find places where, as Ed puts it in the book, the world is giving you a break. Instead of playing -110 on both sides, you have even you have a situation where you can bet either side you want without paying any hold. These are the situations to take advantage of. That's how to win betting sports, you know, today. That's something that we can teach you both through the book and otherwise.
Just a technical question, again, not being someone who bets sports. Here in Nevada, all these places have apps. Is there a way to put those apps on your computer screen so you're not, like, trying to scroll through your phone, switching apps, checking lines to...
No, the reason that you need to have... The reason that they only work on the phones is because of the location services have to be exact. And these things are tested as far as...
Well, they do in New Jersey. You can bet it on the computer in New Jersey.
No way.
Uh-huh. Oh. Yeah, yeah. So in New Jersey, the answer is yes. I believe in Nevada, the answer is no.
Maybe it's regulations.
Because that's a real pain, trying to switch between apps and check the lines. And what about the lines? Is there a place to check the lines?
Well, you need to have 8 phones. And
is there a way to check the lines on the computer where you can see? I mean, I know you can for the... You know, for the sides and totals and stuff, but for the derivatives.
I don't think there's a very good way. I do think that possibly a good business opportunity, especially state to state, would be trying to put together more of a, you know, more of an odd service directed at bettors rather than directed at operators for the different states, the different derivatives. I think it could be interesting.
You know, props. I mean, I think props are going to become a lot more popular. Player props. You know, people want to bet on, you know, touchdowns and yards and all that stuff. And you know.
I would be surprised if there aren't already websites and subscription services that are doing something similar.
Right.
In poker, a tournament gets down to a few players, and they often chop the prize pool, which means they share it, sometimes equally, sometimes not, depending. In this book, you use the word chop in an entirely different context. What do you mean by chopping when it comes to sports betting?
I'm not sure.
Perplexed. Yeah, I don't remember talking
about that. Oh, dear. Well, I'm sure I read it, and I'm sure I'm going to go on to another question now. And while they're answering the next question, I'll do a search online.
It's a verb. It's used as a verb. It's the same thing that I've been talking about. That's
chopping
a good word.
Yeah.
There must have been a very, very late edit to that title.
Yeah.
Thanks, Richard. Thank you very much. So when we talk about the way the word is used in the book, it's called chopping the hold. So if I have one sports book and I go to look at how many touchdowns is Tom Brady going to throw, I'm going to see a line that says 2.5, over under, -110 on either side. I'm looking into a 5% hold. A little less, but close enough. No matter what I do, that's the hold I'm looking into on that one. Now, let's say I have 2 sports books, and one of the lines is Tom Brady touchdown passes, 2.5, -110 on both sides. The other sports book has 2.5 touchdowns, over -120, under even money. Now, if I want to play the over, I play a sports book A at -110. If I want to play the under, I play a sports book B at even money. And now I have chopped my hold in half. I'm paying a 2.5% hold. If I throw a dart at the prop rather than a 5% hold.
Right. And so the concept behind that chapter, chopping the hold, is there's various things you can do as a bettor to kind of eat away at that hold. So the idea is you found a plus EV bet. If you can take that original 4.5% hold or whatever it is and chop it all the way down to 0 and then below 0. And so the first way to chop it is to find these the multiple prices at different books. That chops most of it away.
And you call that synthetic hold.
Yes. I call that a synthetic market. Like you've created a new market between two sports books. And then there's other ways to chop the hold by using angles or other things that you know. You know, so let's say you get the hold down to, you know, less than 1% just by comparing sports books. But now let's say you feel like you have some insight into the game. You've watched a key player. You think he's more injured than kind of, you know, what seems to be in the line, what seems to be in the media, you know, or, you know something about the weather, you know, that you think is not really in the line. And it's in there, but it's not, it's not like, let's say it's windy, but not so windy. Everyone's talking about it on TV. Right. It's a little bit windy. And you say, OK, well, that matters. But, you know, and so maybe people aren't paying attention to that. I'm going to go ahead and bet on the win. I'm going to bet the under because
I got my hold chop down to, you know, 0.5% just by comparing lines between sports books. And then I think this wind is worth that extra 0.5% or more, you know, based on my insight. That's kind of the idea.
And there can be a big misperception here, too. A lot of the as we see these bills in certain states where sports betting is becoming legalized, and an operator or the legislators think, well, we're going to offer this board at, say, a 4% hold. And they just, the assumption is that they will hold 4% because, well, if you offer a slot game at a 4% hold, you hold 4%, right? So in sports, though, it doesn't quite work that way. Why? Well, let's say I'm going to offer 4% hold to all my customers, and if they're not losing 4% to me, well, you know what? They're going to be too sharp. I'm going to kick them out or limit them. You know, consistent practice.
That's a William Hill model.
So let's say that my customer who is throwing darts and all he wants to do is play his teams what he wants to root for. Let's say there's two sports books in the state, and let's say that the customer has the opportunity to bet at both sports books. Well, every single time those sports books don't have the exact same line, even though this customer is not sharp and completely throwing darts, if he just spends enough time or smart enough to look at the -110 and even money bets and pick the better one, well, the hold at both the books, if that's all the customers, is going to be lower than 4% just by definition. If every time, and that's what we see. When we see in Nevada, we see what's actually held on straight bets and how much lower it is than what they're trying to hold. It's not rocket science. Most people have multiple options, even if it's only two or three. And by simply choosing the best option on what you're going to bet on anyway, you lower the hold from the it's intended. You don't get that on slots, obviously, because they're not playing the same game.
Yeah, it's just like the people are going to pull into the gas station that's 2 cents cheaper than the one across the street.
Exactly.
Well, in slots, you do have it by playing on double point days, where instead of a certain level of bonus given to the player, double it or 10 times it, or depending on what the promotion.
Well, and also some players are going to play 9-6 jacks or better instead of 8-5, right? If it's in the same casino and they look at the two machines, some players can figure that out.
Am I a sharp video poker player because I play a 9-6 game rather than an 8-5 game? Well, if that's the definition of sharp, I'm sharp at a lot of things.
No, but it does mean that machine is going to hold.
No, I'm agreeing. I totally agree. Yeah.
It's just he's just making a joke about how kind of the industry considers people sharps. I mean, if that's all you need to be sharp, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a step in the right direction, but there's more chopping you need to do after that.
I mean, that's another thing that I just don't get, is this whole idea of chasing steam. Like, they hate guys who chase steam, but the number's already been moved to the bad number, so why do they hate this customer?
Well, this is when people are betting it before the move. So basically, it's moved in one spot, and they haven't gotten around to moving it. Sportsbook A moves, and Sportsbook B plans to follow Sportsbook A in this market, but you get in there before they follow.
But I thought there were also these players where the total moved from 38 down to 35, and the guy goes, oh, everybody's betting on that side, so he bets the 35.
Those players for the most part.
Oh, they don't? Yeah. Okay.
They're worried about the players that play under 37 in that spot. After a lot of other players are at 35, they're... I don't want to get in the weeds here, but
I get you. Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's pretty basic, but a lot of people on in-stream betting are betting at absolutely the worst time, which would be while the action's going on. Why is that such a bad thing?
Right. So this is actually a huge point if you want to bet.
Huge.
So the thing to realize is that when you say you're watching a game on TV, okay, so the question is, when did that event that you're watching on TV, when did that actually happen in real life, right? The answer tends to be about 10 to 15 seconds before you see it on TV. You know, 10 to 20 seconds, right? 10 on the fastest feeds and 20 on kind of other feeds. So by the time you see the ball snapped on TV, that play's over, and the sportsbook or the third-party in-play
operator, odds operator, knows what happened on the play, what the result of the play is, and the lines that they're showing you are based on the result of the play you haven't seen yet. Same with basketball. The lines you're seeing are the result of the possession that you have not yet seen on TV. Okay, so obviously this is not great to try to bet into that because they have an information a consistent information advantage. On top of that, a lot of the way they deal sometimes these markets, they deal them with delay. So when you put the bet in, you don't get the bet immediately. The little cursor starts ticking, and they basically sit on your bet for 3 to 8 seconds, and they're just sitting on it. It's in a queue. It's waiting, and they're just waiting a few seconds, and then they're going to decide what to do with the bet. Now, the different operators all do different things, but the main point is that by the time that you see something on TV and you decide you want to make a bet, to the time your bet actually gets accepted by an operator, they basically have 20 to 25 seconds extra of game that they're making their decision.
And when you think about it, even anytime there's a delay in the bet, you don't get all the bets. Even if nothing is going wrong, think about which bets you don't get. No matter whether it's for whatever reason, they always happen to be your best bets.
Right. Yeah. If they're saying they don't want the bet, there's a reason. And it's probably the same reason you did want the bet. You know, and if something bad happens for you, well, you're more likely to get those, you know, I mean, or if you made a mistake or whatever. So that's just the natural bias that happens whenever you bet in play. You can't completely mitigate that, especially if they're still, you know, putting a delay and selectively accepting bets during the timeout. But at least during the timeout, if you wait till the action in the game is stopped, you see it stopped on TV, your game has gone to commercial, you open the app, you look at the line, at least you have the same game information roughly that the sports book has when you're looking at the line and making a decision.
And even at that point, you should be looking to play at an operator who is dealing fairly, dealing without that delay.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you know how to find such an operator?
I mean, you really just have to bet some and see how they behave. You know, it's just like a poker player. Right? Like, how do you know if you're at a good poker game? Well, you have to sit down, you have to play a little bit, you have to see how the other players behave, you know, and if you kind of know what you're doing, you'll pick up pretty quickly on whether they're good or not, or what your advantage might be. It's the exact same for this. So you have to, okay, it's a timeout in a game, put a bet in, see what they do. Do they sit on your bet for 6 seconds and then reject it and move the line on you? You know, or do they generally accept all your bets? You know, do they not have a delay? Sometimes, you know, does the operator say, you know what, it's the timeout, everyone's got the same information. If we offer the bet and you make the bet, it's a bet, you know? So that's obviously what you're looking for, and the more you see of that behavior and the less you see of the, you know, delays and rejections, the better off it is for you.
And that's the way gambling should work. If I'm an operator and I offer a line and you bet it, you should get the bet. If I don't want to give you the bet, I shouldn't offer a line. I mean, it's certainly how Nevada Gaming Commission rules, you know, are written.
Yep.
Doesn't seem fair. Although, if you and I are going to bet, and I think you would have the best of that bet, I'm not likely to give you the bet, even if it's on, you know, we're betting how soon will Ed Miller cut his hair. We might have different opinions on that, but if I think I have the worst of it, I'm not going to bet it.
Yeah, I mean, you're actually hitting on, I mean, what I think is what we talk about in the book as being the key to sports betting. It's a multiplayer game. Everyone's trying to win. You're trying to win. Right. I'm trying to win.
Right. And the more the sports book operator is, it basically, every time you see a bet rejection, you know, every time you see that thing where you click in a bet and it says go, and then it comes back and it says sorry, that is someone making a decision on the other end that whatever you did wasn't in their best interest. You know, they didn't want that action for whatever reason. And it doesn't have to be nefarious. They don't have to be cheating or anything.
It could have been their line move for a different reason. It's not there's anything. A person that says no, right. Necessarily, but even if you put in a bet at a sports book and let's say there's a, you know, 6 second delay, if they're not even watching when your bet comes, and let's say I bet $10 and it's the sports book with the delay, even if they don't know what's happened, if they happen to have moved the line within that 6 seconds, you're not going to get your $10 bet. And
systematically over time, the bets they reject are going to be the bets you want, and the bets they accept are going to be the bets you don't want. That's just how it works. That's the bias of this selection process. So that's why it's bad for a better.
But at the same time, don't $10 bets tend to go through no matter what, whereas $1,000 bets wouldn't?
For sure. Most operators, most platforms, even the ones with delays, are putting in, you know, things where the smaller bets go right through, the bigger bets take time. But when you think about it, if I want to bet $2,000 and not $20, why shouldn't I be given the same fair shake by the operator, the same chance of winning as the operator, as the guy betting $20, just because I have more money?
Because, as Spanky says, they're dressmakers, not bookmakers.
You know, I mean, I try to be a little bit sympathetic to them. I mean, they have a problem because what they're trying to do is they're trying to offer their product to as many customers as they can, but they know that the product has vulnerabilities. They know that they can get beat if I'm sure Spanky would love for them to just take every bet, no questions asked, all day long. Well, guess what's going to happen? Everyone knows what's going to happen.
I don't think that a lot of bettors realize how hard it is on the operator end and how much their hands can be tied with the software, the platforms, and I think that people don't understand how many sharks are in the water and how many people, and I know, I mean, maybe your listeners more than most, understand exactly what's out there if you mess up a promotion.
If you mess up, I mean, someone's going to vouch for you. You know, and I mean, think about, I mean, again, from their perspective, every time you make a mistake, somebody shoves it in your face. I mean, that's, you know.
Speaking of messing up, Chris Andrews, who runs the South Point Sportsbook, has a new book out. Yep. I don't know if you've read it, but
I can't wait. I have it on order.
We're excited. Yeah,
but he tells a story about the guy who wanted teasers, and so he showed the guy how to do the teasers, and the guy put hockey on the teaser cards. So with 6.5 point, you know, teasers on hockey.
Oh my goodness!
And,
right.
Yeah. So yeah, you make a mistake. That one, you know, everybody can figure out.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's a balance, especially with in play. I mean, it's a good product. You want to offer it to people, you know. At the same time, if you just offer it no holds barred, you know, I mean, you know what's going to happen. So I think it's reasonable to take precautions. The question is, what precautions do you take? And our perspective is, the right attitude for sportsbooks to take is offer a strong, sharp line, offer it at timeouts only when everyone has the same information, and then you don't have to worry about people, you know, jumping on your every mistake.
Yeah, and also don't make mistakes when you put out the line.
Well, careful. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, put out 15 lines a game and make sure they're good. Don't have a line up every 2 seconds.
Well, I think some of the European operators that have come over and started in New Jersey, I mean, think about the big mistake that FanDuel made on a Broncos-Raiders late game. I don't know if you guys remember, but they end up paying out. This isn't Europe. This is America, and the bet's going to be a bet, and I think that's the way the laws are going to get written, regardless. And therefore, like you said, work on doing a better job. Everyone needs to get better, and hopefully, that's where we come in to chip in.
So, assuming we have sportsbook operators listening to this program, and they want to get in touch with you so they can buy your product because it's clearly the better than what they have now, how does some of these people get in touch with you?
So our company is called Deck Prism Sports. And so we have
Say that slow. Deck?
Deck Prism Sports. Like Deck Prism
Sports. Like D-E-C-K?
D-E-C-K, yeah. Deck Prism Sports, and it's deckprismsports.com is our website. You can find us there. You can find me on Twitter at Ed Miller Poker. You can find Matt on Twitter at David Al Matthew on Twitter. That's easy ways to get in.
And the logic of sportsbetting.com is a website as well.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the book. And the Deck Prism website is where you're going to put up your live feed starting in August.
Correct. Yep. So if you're interested, if you're a bettor, you want to check us out, you want to look at what, you know, our opinion is on live sporting events, you know, starting in August compared to what's available, you know, that's what it's there for. So please feel free.
So the noted pokerauthority.com is no longer active.
It's still there.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get a new Twitter handle.
I know.
Very good. It's been fun, both of you. Richard and I both learned a lot from this book. Like, we've had a lot of really sharp sports bettors on this show. Spanky,
Dink, Rufus, Alexander, Frank B., Anthony Curtis. So I've picked up a lot of things from these interviews. This book opened my eyes. So if you're already really, really sharp at sports betting, you probably aren't going to find out a lot of stuff here. But if you are, it could be called, to steal a title from me, Sports Betting for the Intelligent Beginner. It covers the basis is where you're going to find the edge. It doesn't tell you what the edge is because that's going to keep changing, but it tells you where you're going to find it. So I recommend it. I think Richard does as well. Thank you both.
I do, highly.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit Royal Flushes, everybody. Good day.